Consultations start at 10 a.m.
Complete details are online at www.antiracism.media.
This is a CKUT Cole presentation.
Hello, my name is Alia. I'm at CKUT in Montreal, 90.3 FM. Keep on rocking in the free world.
You are listening to CKUT 90.3 FM.
CKUT, we're on the air. Live, CKUT.
And good evening and welcome to the April 28th edition of Drama Text. Tonight we'll be presenting the work of two poets, Audre Lorde and Gwendolyn Brooks. Audre Lorde's reading took place in Berlin shortly before her death in 1992. And we'll hear about a half hour of that reading, and then the last half hour of the show will be dedicated to the work of Gwendolyn Brooks. Well, here she is, Audre Lorde.
I'm really happy to be sharing these poems with you this afternoon. I can't think of a group of women I would prefer to be reading to. And I'm also so happy to know that this is going to Ellen Kuzwayo and to Joyce Sirota and to the other women of South Africa, because there are poems here that are particular and special for me and for them also. Echoes, you know, these poems that I'm about to read are all from my new book, The Marvelous Arithmetics of Distance. And this book, really, all of the poems in it deal with the different ways that we have of seeing things depending on where we are standing, how distance alters our perception so radically. The title of the first is Echoes, and this is the poem that I was speaking to you about. There is a timbre of voice that comes from not being heard and knowing you are not being heard, which is noticed only by others not being heard for the same reason. The flavor of midnight fruit, tongue calling your body through dark light, piercing the allure of safety, ripping the glitter of silence around you. Dazzle me with color, and perhaps I won't notice till after you're gone, and your hot grain smell tattooed into each new poem, resonant beyond escape. I am listening in that fine space between desire and always, the grave stillness before choice. As my tongue unravels, in what pitch will the scream hang unsung, or shiver like lace on the borders of never recording which dreams heal, which dream can kill? Stabbing a man, burning his body for cover, being caught making love to a woman I do not know. The next two poems are poems that came out of the time that Gloria and I spent in the south of France with the woman from South Africa. And the first one is called Party Time. I need to explain a little bit to you about one reference in here. I speak of broken potsherds, and in West Africa, broken potsherds are left on a woman's hearthstone as a sign that one of her sons did not survive an initiation ritual, and therefore that he will not return. And Eleanor Bumpers is the name of a woman who was killed in her house, a 67-year-old black grandmother who was shot down in the Bronx a few years ago because she refused to let people come into her house by police. So the title of this is Party Time. Newspapers printed in secret report the bent needles under the child's fingernail, barbed stitches through the bleeding scalp, the grandchildren playing hide and seek, riddled with bullets behind a silk cotton tree. Two more funerals in Soweto. Behind the small coffins, Lillian's son-in-law drags his feet, Achilles tendons shredded by police dogs, festering. In their eyes, each memory of home poised over potsherds in the dawn. But who sings the songs of my mother's muscled beauty? These large, sore-footed women with nimble tongues, gnarled ankles stepping to an elegant rhythm, arms akimbo in quick march time, rocking with laughter, and the young ones strut without illusion, their weathered extreme bodies blossoming in the singing night. Lillian's hooded eyes invite me into the circle, a strum of voices weaving an intricate drum. Over grape juice in South Provence, the women from South Africa lower their voices, discussing rent and who has not yet paid, a protest punishable by death, burning through the Morfilo night. Eleanor Bumper's grandmother, shotgunned against her kitchen wall by the rent marshals in the Bronx, moves back and forth among us, humming. Her breath is sweet acacia in this stone yard at sunset. Rhythms quicken, and I come next behind her in our dance. Prism, and this poem is for Joyce Sirota, who asked me that night to write a poem for them. There are no frogs in Soweto. Students croak gamandla through the tear gas. Not true. No frogs live in Soweto. Only we are too weary with no ears left to hear them. Who knows where frogs live in Soweto? Who has time to listen? Stroll along a moonlit gutter beyond the flames of evening, rising, falling, the thin, high screams of skewered children. but in the bruising fist of challenge, the future does not tarry. Take our words to bed with you. Dream upon them. Choose anyone's you wish. Write us a poem. Write us a poem. Now, I really want some feedback about this poem, because it's a dream, and I feel different ways about it at different times. The title of it is 1984, which, if you remember, was George Orwell's magical time of the future. This was, in fact, a dream I had on April the 4th. And April the 4th, as you may also know, is the anniversary of Martin Luther King's assassination. On April the 4th, I dreamt I became president. Here I was, finally in a position to do it all right. The air was frantic with endless detail. Hotel rooms too small, too old, too few. The staff not acting right, goofing off on the job. The Secretary of State resigning. I need someone to manage the White House. The person I'd asked to come do it doesn't want to work for another black woman. What shall I wear to the ball? Decide about the cost of living, foreign policy, the ozone layer? I'm going to read poetry at my inauguration. Francis and I are in the limousine. The Secret Service men are driving behind us. I discover I've forgotten my poems. We turn back. In the car these days is the only time Francis and I get a chance to be together. But one good thing about being president is we don't have to stop for red lights. Another good thing is neither of us has to drive, so we can relax together in the back seat, even neck if we want to. And nobody can say a thing about our being lesbians, because I am president now. We try to do our best, don't we? It was quite a dream. Okay. Now, this poem, I think, belongs to all of you. I wrote it just about a year ago, here in Berlin. I wrote it, well, today's the 19th. I wrote it on the 18th. No, today's the 20th, September the 20th. I wrote this on September the 18th, 1991, and that was the anniversary, the second anniversary of the morning after Hugo, the hurricane. So the title of this poem is Restoration, a Memorial, September the 18th, 1991. Berlin again. After chemotherapy, I reach behind me once more for days to come. Sweeping around the edges of authenticity, 2 years after Hugo blew one life away. Death, like a burned star perched on the rim of my teacup, flaming the honey drips from my spoon, sunlight flouncing off the gargoyles opposite. The morning after, even foresight cannot penetrate this net of rain and relief. Our place forever altered. I finger through the shards left after the storm. Somewhere, it is Tuesday in the ordinary world. Ravagement fades into the compelling tasks our bodies learn to perform. Quite a lot of our house is left, the bedroom spared, except the ankle-deep water and the terrible stench. Would I exchange this safety of exile for the muddy hand-drawn waters, relieving ourselves behind the tantan bush, half-rotten vegetables, the antique gray settling over your face that October? I want you laughing again after the stinking rugs are cut up and dragged away, after the crystal chandelier is dug out of the living room floor, the refrigerator righted, the broken cupboards stacked in piles outside to dry for the evening fire. A few trees still stand in our brand new landscape, but the sea road is still impassable. We gather coconuts galore from the newly carved beach. We stash them behind the wash buckets where our front porch had been. Your red shirt hung out on a bush to dry is the only flower for weeks. No escape, no return, and no other life half so sane. In this alien and temporary haven, my poisoned fingers slowly return to normal. I read your letter, dreaming the perspective of a bluefish or a fugitive parrot. I watch the chemicals leaving my nails as my skin takes back its weaknesses, and I learn to laugh again. This is another Berlin poem. I wrote this in 1989, December 1989. It's called East Berlin, December 1989. It feels dangerous now to be black in Berlin. The sad suicides that never got reported. Neukölln, Kreuzberg, the Neon Zoo, a new siege along unto den Linden with Paris accents, New York hustle, so many tattered visions intersecting. Already my blood shrieks through the East Berlin streets, misplaced hatred, volcanic tallies, rung upon cement. Afro-German woman stomped to death by skinheads in Alexanderplatz. Two-year-old girls half cooked on their camp cots. Who pays the price for their disillusion? Handheld, the candles wink in Berlin's scant November light. Hitting the wall at 30 miles an hour, vision first, is still hitting a wall. And on the other side, a rank dream, where dreams, a rank chasm, where dreams of laurels lie. Hollowness wed to triumph, differing only from defeat, only in the approaching tasks. And the last two poems that I wanted to share with you are the last two poems in this book, which I love very much. And appropriately, the sun comes out because they feel to me great affirmations. Both of these poems feel like very, very strong affirmations for me. The night blooming cereus is jasmine. You know, the sweet, sweet smelling jasmine? Well, it blooms at night in the Virgin Islands, and there's a flower very, very similar to it, almost indistinguishable from it, which is called also the night blooming cereus. It's very, very sweet. It's very hard to find because it's very inconspicuous, but the smell of it is just overpowering. And I call it Lady of the Night. The night blooming cereus. Lady of the night, star-breathed, blooms along the sea road between my house and the tasks before me. Calls down a flute carved from the leg bone of a gull. Through the core of me, a fine rigged wire upon which pain will not falter, nor predict. I was no stranger to this arena at high noon. Beyond was not an enemy to be avoided, but a challenge against which my neck grew strong, against which my metal struck, and I rang like fire in the sun. I still patrol that line, sword drawn, lighting red glazed candles of partition along the scar, the surest way of knowing death is a fractured border through the center of my days, imagination dare not cross. Bees seek their need, until flowers beckon beyond the limit of their wings. Then they drop where they fly, the luscious pollen baskets laden, the sweet work done. They do not know the Lady of the Night blossoms between my house and the sea road, calling down a flute carved from the leg bone of a gull, your rich voice riding the shadows of conquering air. And this, which is my declaration of life. Today is not the day. Well, I can't just sit here staring death in her face, blinking and asking for a new name with which to greet her. I am not afraid to say, unembellished, I am dying. But I do not want to do it while looking the other way. Today is not the day. It could be, but it is not. Today is today. In the early moving morning, sun shining down upon the farmhouse in my belly, lighting the well-swept alleys of this town, growing in my liver, intricate vessels swelling with the gift of Mother Mahu and her mischievous daughter, Afrikaiti. Afrikaiti, Afrikaiti, my beloved, feel the sun of my days surround you, binding our pathways. We have water to carry honey to harvest, bright seed to plant for the next fair. We will linger to exchange sweet oil along each other's ashy legs. The evening light crests on your cheekbones. By this rising, some piece of our labor is already half done. The taste of loving, doing a bit of work, having some fun, riding my wheels so close to the edge, my eyelashes blaze. Beth dangles her stethoscope over the rearview mirror. Jonathan fine-tunes his fix on Orion, working through another equation. Youth, tortoise and arrow stretch to their borders. The barb sinking so far, it vanishes from the surface. I dare not tremble for them, only pray laughter comes often enough to soften the edge. And Gloria, Gloria, whose difference I learn with the love of a sister, you in my eyes' bright appetite, light playing along your muscle as you swing. This could be the day. I could slip anchor and wander to the end of the jetty, uncoil into the waters a vessel of light, moon glade, ride the freshets to sundown, and when I am gone, another stranger will find you coiled on the warm sand, beached treasure, and love you for the different stories your seas tell. And the half-finished blossoms growing out of my season trail behind with a comforting hum. But today is not the day. Today. For you. I'm so really, really pleased to be doing this. I'm sorry my voice is not better today, but I hope you could hear it, and I hope you could hear the love with which I share these. I'm really sorry it didn't come across better.
Well, you're listening to CKUT 90.3 on the FM dial. That was Audrey Lorde in the reading of her poems in Berlin in 1992, a few months, 2 months before her death in 1992, November of 1992. We're going to continue now with the poems of Gwendolyn Brooks.
Kitchenette Building. We are things of dry hours and the involuntary plan. Grayed in and gray. Dream makes a giddy sound, not strong like rent, feeding a wife, satisfying a man. But could a dream send up through onion fumes its white and violet, fight with fried potatoes and yesterday's garbage ripening in the hall, flutter, or sing an aria down these rooms? Even if we were willing to let it in, had time to warm it, keep it very clean, anticipate a message, let it begin. We wonder, but not well, not for a minute. Since number 5 is out of the bathroom now, we think of lukewarm water, hope to get in it. The parents, people like our marriage, Maxie and Andrew, clogged and soft, and sloppy eyes have lost the light that bites or terrifies. There are no swans and swallows anymore. The people settled for chicken and shut the door. But one by one, they got things done. Watch for porches as you pass, and prim low fencing, pinching in the grass. Pleasant custards sit behind the white Venetian blind. Do not be afraid of no. Do not be afraid of no, who has so far, so very far to go. New caution to occur to one whose inner scream set her to seed for softer lapping and smooth fur, whose esoteric need was merely to avoid the nettle, to not bleed. Stupid, like a street that beats into a dead end and dies there, with nothing left to reprimand or meet. And like a candle fixed against dismay and countershine of mixed wild moon and sun, and like a flying furniture or bird with lattice wing or gaunt thing, a stammer down a nightmare neon peopled with condor, hawk, and shrike. To say yes is to die a lot or a little. The dead wear capably their wry, enameled emblems. They smell. But that, and that they do not altogether yell, is all that we know well. It is brave to be involved, to be not fearful, to be unresolved. Her new wish was to smile when answers took no airships, walked a while. My little bout town gal, Roger of Rhodes. My little bout town gal has gone bout town with powder and blue dye on her pale lids, and on her lips dye sits quite carminly. I'm scarcely healthy-hearted or human. What can I teach my cheated woman? My Tondaleo, my black blonde, will not be homing soon. None shall secure her save the light, the detective fingers of the moon. The bean eaters. They eat beans mostly, this old yellow pair. Dinner is a casual affair. Plain chipware on a plain and creaking wood. Tin flatware. Two who are mostly good. Two who have lived their day, but keep on putting on their clothes and putting things away. And remembering, remembering with twinklings and twinges as they lean over the beans in their rented back room that is full of beads and receipts and dolls and cloths, tobacco crumbs, vases, and fringes. Oh, Mary, my last defense is the present tense. It little hurts me now to know I shall not go cathedral hunting in Spain, nor cherrying in Michigan or Maine. The lovers of the poor arrive. The ladies from the Ladies' Betterment League arrive in the afternoon. The light lights slanting in diluted gold bars across the boulevard brag of proud, seamed faces with mercy and murder hinting here, there, interrupting all deep and debonair, the pink paint on the innocence of fear, walk in a gingerly manner up the hall, cutting with knives served by their softest care, served by their love, so barbarously fair, whose mothers taught, you'd better not be cruel, you had better not throw stones upon the wrens. Herein they kiss and coddle and assault anew and dearly in the innocence with which they baffle nature, who are full, sleek, tender-clad, fit 50-ish, aglow, all sweetly abortive, hinting at fat fruit, judge it high time that 50-ish fingers felt beneath the lovelier plains of enterprise, to resurrect, to moisten with milky chill, to be a random hitching post or plush, to be, for wet eyes, random and handy hem. Their guild is giving money to the poor, the worthy poor, the very, very worthy and beautiful poor, perhaps just not too swarthy, perhaps just not too dirty, nor too dim, nor passionate. In truth, what they could wish is something less than derelict or dull, not staunch enough to stab, though, gaze for gaze. God shield them sharply from the beggar bold, the noxious, needy ones whose battles bawled nonetheless for being voiceless. Hits one down. But it's also bad and entirely too much for them. The stench, the urine, cabbage, and dead beans, dead porridges of assorted dusty grains, the old smoke, heavy diapers, and they're told something called chitterlings, the darkness, drawn darkness or dirty light, the soil that stirs, the soil that looks the soil of centuries, and for that matter, the general oldness, old wood, old marble, old tile, old, old, old. Not home kind oldness, not Lake Forest, Glencoe. Nothing is sturdy, nothing is majestic. There is no quiet drama, no rubbed glaze, no unkillable infirmity of such a tasteful turn as lately they have left. Glencoe, Lake Forest, and to which their cars must presently restore them, when they're done with dullards and distortions of this fistic patience of the poor and put upon. They've never seen such a make-do-ness as newspaper rugs before. In this flat, their hostess is gathering up the oozed, the rich rugs of the morning, tattered, the bespattered, readies to spread clean rugs for afternoon. Here is a scene for you. The ladies look in horror behind a substantial citizeness whose trains clank out across her swollen heart, who arms akimbo almost fills a door. All tumbling children, quilts dragged to the floor and tortured thereover, potato peelings, soft-eyed kitten, hunched up, haggard, to be hurt. Their league is allotting largest to the lost, but to put their clean, their pretty money, to put their money collected from delicate rose fingers tipped with their 100 flawless rose nails, seems they own Spode, Lowestoft, candelabra, mantles and hostess gowns, and sunburst clocks, turtle soup, Chippendale, red satin hangings, Aubusson's and Hattie Carnegie. They winter in Palm Beach, cross the water in June, attend, when suitable, the Nice Art Institute, buy the right books and the best bindings, saunter on Michigan Easter mornings in sun or wind. Oh, squalor, this sick four-story hulk, this fiber with fissures everywhere. Why, what are bringings of loath love largesse? What shall peril hunger so old, old? What shall flatter the desolate? Blocked fire escape and chitterling and swaggering seeking youth and the puzzled wreckage of the middle stale shames and again the porridges of the underslung and children, children, children. Heavens! That was a rat, surely, off there in the shadows, long and long-tailed, gray. The ladies from the Ladies' Betterment League agree it will be better to achieve the outer air that rights and steadies, to hie to a house that does not holler, to ring bells else-tang, better presently to cater to no more possibilities, to get away. Perhaps the money can be posted. Perhaps they, too, may choose another slum, some serious, sooty, half-unhappy home, where loath love likelier may be invested. Keeping their scented bodies in the center of the hall, As they walk down the hysterical hall, they allow their lovely skirts to graze no wall, are off at what they manage of a canter, and resuming all the clues of what they were, try to avoid inhaling the laden air. A man of the middle class, I'm what has gone out blithely and with noise returning. I'm what rushed around to pare down rind to find fruit frozen under there. I am bedraggled with sundry dust to be shed, trailing desperate tarnished tassels, these strident Aprils with terrifying polkas and bugle calls confound me. Although I've risen and my back is bold, my tongue is brainy, choosing from among care, rage, surprise, despair, and choosing care. I'm semi-splendid within what I've defended. Yet there I totter, there limp laxly, my uncomely trudge to plateau that and platitudinous plateau, whichever, is no darling to my grudge-choked industry or usual alcohol. I've roses to guard in the architectural prettiness of my yard, but there are no paths remarkable for wide, believable welcomes. I have loved directions. I have loved orders and an iron to stride. I, whose hands are papers now, fit only for tossing in this outrageous air. Not God nor grace nor candy balls will get me everything different and the same. My wife has canvas walls. My wife never quite forgets to put flowers in vases, bizarre prints in the most unusual places, give teas for poets, wear odoriferous furs, and awful blooming is hers. I've antique firearms, blackamoors, Chinese rugs, ivories, bronzes, everything I wanted. But have I answers? Oh, methinks I've answers such as have the executives I copied long ago, the ones who, forfeiting Vic Salve, prayer book, and mother, shot themselves last Sunday, all forsaking all that was theirs but for their money's taking. I've answers such as giants used to know. There's a giant who'll jump next Monday, all forsaking wives, safes, and solitaire, and the elegant statue standing at the foot of the stair. Kid Bruin arranges another title defense. I rode into the golden yell of the hollow land of fame, and when I mentioned Rainbow, they did not know the name, but thought it might have been there, and overnight have hid, adding that nothing in that land could be trapped or tied. Trapped or tied or kissed for good, or bound about the hand, they could not swear to Rainbow in that hollow land. The ghost at the Quincy Club. All filmy down she drifts in filmy stuffs and all. Some gentle Gentile girl wafts down our Quincy Hall. This was a mansion once, with polished panels and all, where velvet voices lessened, stopped, and rose, rise raucous howdies, and a curse comes pure. Yea, it comes pure and challenges again all ghost heirs, graces, all daughters of gentlemen, moth soft, off sweet, demure. Where tea and father were, each clear and lemony, our dark folk drinking beer. Garbage man, the man with the orderly mind. What do you think of us in fuzzy endeavor, you whose directions are sterling, whose lunge is straight? Can you make a reason? How can you pardon us who memorize the rules and never score? Who memorize the rules from your own text, but never quite transfer them to the game? Who never quite receive the whistling ball, who gawk begin to absorb the crowd's own roar. Is earnestness enough? May earnestness attract or lead to light? Is light enough if hands in clumsy frenzy, flimsy whimsicality enlist? Is light enough when this bewilderment, crying against the dark, shuts down the shades? Dilute confusion. Find and explode our mist. Weaponed woman. Well, life has been a baffled vehicle and baffling, but she fights and has fought according to her lights and the lenience of her whirling place. She fights with semi-folded arms, her strong bag, and the stiff frost of her face that challenges when and if. And altogether, she does rather well. Riot. A riot is the language of the unheard, Martin Luther King. John Cabot, out of Wilma, once a Wycliffe, all white-blue rose below his golden hair, wrapped richly in right linen and right wool, almost forgot his Jaguar and Lake Bluff, almost forgot Grand Tully, which is the best thing that ever happened to Scotch, almost forgot the sculpture at the Richard Gray and Distelheim, the kidney pie at Maxim's, the Grenadine de Boeuf at Maison Henri. Because the Negroes were coming down the street, because the poor were sweaty and unpretty, not like two dainty Negroes in Winnetka, and they were coming toward him in rough ranks, in seas, in windsweep. They were black and loud, and not detainable, and not discreet. Gross, gross, que tu es grossier, John Cabot itched instantly beneath the nourished white that told his story of glory to the world. Don't let it touch me, the blackness, Lord, he whispered to any handy angel in the sky. But in a thrilling announcement, on it drove and breathed on him and touched him. In that breath, the fume of pigfoot, chitterling and cheap chili, malign, mocked John. And in terrific touch, old averted doubt jerked forward decently, cried, Cabot, John, you are a desperate man, and the desperate die expensively today. John Cabot went down in the smoke and fire and broken glass and blood, and he cried, Lord, forgive these niggas that know not what they do. Gang girls, a rangerette. Gang girls are sweet exotics. Mary Ann uses the nutrients of her Orient, but sometimes sighs for cities of blue and jewel beyond her ranger rim of Cottage Grove. Bowery boys, disciples, whip birds will dissolve no margins, stop no savory sanctities. Mary is a rose in a whiskey glass. Mary's February's shudder and are gone. April's fret frankly. Lilac hurries on. Summer is a hard, irregular ridge. October looks away. And that's the year, save for her bugle love, save for the bleat of not obese devotion, save for somebody terribly dying under the philanthropy of Robbins, save for her ranger bringing an amount of rainbow in a string-drawn bag. Where did you get the diamond? Do not ask, but swallow straight the spirals of his flask and assist him at your zipper. Pet his lips and help him clutch you. Love's another departure. Will there be any arrivals, confirmations? Will there be gleaning? Mary, the shake dancer's child from the rooming flat, pants carefully, peers at her laboring lover. Mary, Mary Ann, Settle for sandwiches, settle for stocking caps, for sudden blood, aborted carnival, the props and niceties of non-loneliness, the rhymes of leaning. The wall. A drum, drum, drum. Humbly we come. South of success and east of gloss and glass, our sandals, flower cloth, grave hoops of wood or gold, pendant from black ears, brown ears, reddish brown, and ivory ears. Black boymen on roofs, fist out black power, Val, a little black stampede in African images of brass and flower swirl, fists out black power, tightens pretty eyes, leans back on mother country and is tracked, is treatise, through her perfect and tight teeth. Women in wool hair chant their poetry. Phil Coran gives us messages and music made of developed bone and polished and honed cult. It is the hour of tribe and of vibration, the day-long hour. It is the hour of ringing rowls of ferment festival. On 43rd and Langley, black furnaces resent ancient legislatures of ploy and scruple and practical gelatin. They keep the fever in, fondle the fever. All worship the wall. I mount the rattling wood. Walter says, she is good, says she our sister is. In front of me, hundreds of faces, red, brown, brown, black, ivory, yield me hot trust, their yea and their announcement that they are ready to rile the high-flung ground. Behind me, paint, heroes. No child has defiled the heroes of this wall, this serious appointment, this still wing, this scald, this flute, this heavy light, this hinge. An emphasis is paroled. The old decapitations are revised, the dispossessions beakless, and we sing. The sermon on the warpland. The fact that we are black is our ultimate reality, said Ron Karenga. And several strengths from drowsiness campaigned, but spoke in single sermon on the warpland, and went about the warpland saying, no, my people, black and black, revile the river. Say that the river turns, and turn the river. Say that our something in double pod contains seeds for the coming hell and health together. Prepare to meet, sisters, brothers, the brash and terrible weather, the pains, the bruising, the collapse of bestials, idols. But then, oh then, the stuffing of the halls, the seasoning of the perilously sweet, the health, the heralding of the clear obscure. Build now your church, my brothers, sisters. Build never with brick nor corten, nor with granite. Build with lithe love, with love like lion eyes, with love like morning rise, with love like black, our black, luminously indiscreet, complete, continuous. The children of the poor. People who have no children can be hard, attain a male of ice and insolence, need not pause in the fire, and in no sense hesitate in the hurricane to guard. And when wide world is bitten and beward, they perish purely, waving their spirits hence without a trace of grace or of offense, to laugh or fail, diffident, wonder-starred. While through a throttling dark we others hear the little lifting helplessness, the queer whimper whine, whose unridiculous lost softness soft deftly makes a trap for us and makes a curse and makes a sugar of the malocclusions, the inconditions of love. What shall I give my children who are poor, who are adjudged the least wise of the land, who are my sweetest lepers, who demand no velvet and no velvety velour, but who have begged me for a brisk contour, crying that they are quasi, contraband because unfinished, graven by a hand less than angelic, admirable or sure. My hand is stuffed with mode, design, device, but I lack access to my proper stone, and plenitude of plan shall not suffice, nor grief nor love shall be enough alone to ratify my little halves, who bear across an autumn, freezing everywhere. And shall I prime my children, pray, to pray? Mites come invade most frugal vestibules, spectred with crusts of penitence renewals, and all hysterics arrogant for a day. Instruct yourselves, here is no devil to pay. Children, confine your lights in jellied rules, resemble graves, be metaphysical mules. Learn, Lord, will not distort nor leave the fray. Behind the scurryings of your neat motif, I shall wait, if you wish. Revise the psalm, if that should frighten you. Sew up belief, if that should tear. Turn, singularly calm, at forehead and at fingers rather wise, holding the bandage ready for your eyes. First fight, then fiddle. Ply the slipping string with feathery sorcery, muzzle the note with hurting love, the music that they wrote bewitch, bewilder, qualify to sing threadwise. Devise no salt, no hempen thing, for the dear instrument to bear. Devote the bow to silts and honey. Be remote a while from malice and from murdering. But first, to arms, to armor. Carry hate in front of you and harmony behind. Be deaf to music and to beauty blind. Win war. Rise bloody, maybe not too late, for having first to civilize a space wherein to play your violin with grace. When my dears die, the festival-colored brightness that is their motion and mild repartee enchanted, a macabre mockery charming the rainbow radiance into tightness and into a remarkable politeness that is not kind and does not want to be, may not they in the crisp encounter see something to recognize and read as rightness? I say they may, so granitely discreet, the little crooked questionings in bound, concede themselves on most familiar ground, cold and old predicament of the breath, adroit the shapely prefaces complete, accept the university of death.
So you've been listening to CKUT 90.3 on the FM dial. This has been Droma Text. We're here once a week with the spoken word. We started off the show with the last reading of Audre Lorde, a reading that took place in Berlin in 1992. And we finished off the last half of the show with a recording of the work of Gwendolyn Brooks. Coming up on CKUT is Le Chant pour le Monde Stone, ou Francis et les Exerciceurs. And we'll be back next week with another hour-long presentation of the spoken word.
Pangea de Futura is a mega-jam collective comprised of many veterans of the Montreal music scene, a wide range of tectonic plates coming together, making the world stop for a second and ripping these continents apart. CKUT 90.3 FM is proud to present their concert in collaboration with CHYZ 94.3, on Sunday, May 22nd at 3 p.m. at the 38th Festival International de Musique Actuelle de Victoriaville. For all the details on the 38th FIMAV, visit fimav.qc.ca.
We pledge resistance.
What's up? This is Saul Williams chilling here in Montreal, here on CKUT. Peace.
We pledge alliance with those who have undergone attack for voicing opposition to the war.
Apprendre à vivre avec le virus, c'est d'abord demeurer prudent. On doit continuer de porter le masque et de se laver les mains. Dès l'apparition de symptômes, il faut s'isoler et passer un test de dépistage. Si on a la COVID-19, il est important de respecter la période d'isolement, car on peut demeurer contagieux pendant au moins 10 jours. Les personnes les plus à risque de développer des complications en raison de leur âge ou d'une immunosuppression doivent être très vigilantes. Et pour une meilleure protection encore, on doit se faire vacciner. Un message du gouvernement du Québec.
Thanks to everyone who donated to CKUT's annual funding drive. Your generosity truly helps keep our engines burning. It's never too late to donate. You can do so by calling 514-907-9424 or going to ckut.ca and hit the green Make a Pledge button at the top. All paid entries will be entered into a grand prize draw. You can pay your pledge and pick up your gift weekdays between 11 to 6 p.m. or by appointments. Call 514-907-9424. Thank you.
Vous écoutez Show pour le Monstone sur les ondes de CKUT 90.3 FM.